Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up, turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. It's been a little bit of a slow week for interviews, but we're catching up now. Next up is our good friend Jim Bamford. He is the author of The Puzzle Palace, Body of Secrets, and The Shadow Factory, all three about the National Security Agency. He also wrote A Pretext for War, all about how the neoconservatives lied us into our aggressive invasion of Iraq back in 2002 and 2003, and a ton of great articles about James Rendon and about the National Security Agency and all over the place at and a bunch of other great topics, very important topics at Rolling Stone, at Wired.com, and I think the Wall Street Journal and other places. Anyway, welcome back to the show, Jim. How are you?
Oh, thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. Yeah, doing good.
Good. Very happy to talk to you again. I haven't heard from you in a while. I hope that's because you're in the middle of writing another book.
Oh, yeah, a bunch of writing projects I'm working on, so I'm usually hard to get a hold of when I'm writing.
Hey, no problem. It never bothers me when you're hard to get a hold of, because that's what I assume, is that there's, a book worth its weight in platinum on its way. So, and by the way, everybody, you got to read The Shadow Factory. I mean, this thing, it'll blow your mind, and you'll have bad dreams for a week or something, but still, you got to read this thing about the National Security Agency. As far as, someone who's never worked for them, you probably are the number one expert on the NSA in our great land here, and I just would like to hear your reaction to the two big stories. I'll give credit for both of them to The Guardian, even though The Post is tagging along on the second there. The National Security Agency has been collecting the metadata of all Americans' phone calls, apparently, not just Verizon, but all Americans' phone calls. And then also, there's this thing, PRISM, about them breaking into all of the biggest internet or, online services that people use, like Skype and Yahoo and et cetera like that. So I guess, can you tell us what you know and what we need to know here?
Well, a funny thing is that's what a lot of people, including me, have been suggesting for quite a while. People like Bill Benny, former NSA senior official, whistleblower, and so forth, have been arguing that the NSA is heavily involved in domestic surveillance. And the NSA kept saying, no, it's ridiculous. We would never do anything like that. And, they would be still saying that unless somebody came up with actual documents. And that's what makes this so important and interesting, is the fact that it's not just a whistleblower out there talking to a reporter. It's actual documents that are only about a month old, both from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which is extremely hard to get any information out of, and from a top secret code word, no foreign document from NSA with a lot of slides showing exactly how the NSA eavesdrops on or cooperates, basically, gets access to nine internet service companies, Yahoo and Google and Apple and everything else. And all the time they've been saying that, we don't have any connection to these companies.
Okay, now, so to break this down a little bit, I believe, am I correct, that in both of these cases, they're claiming that the threshold is that the computer has to judge that there's a 51% probability that at least one part of the interaction is overseas or outside U.S. borders somewhere?
Yeah, that's right.
That's their version of probable cause in this case, I guess.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, when they're doing these... The other thing is that what they use a lot of this information for is data mining. So once they get a name or once they get a telephone number or once they get an email, you know, if it's even if it's a foreign email, then they start drawing these concentric circles around it and seeing who's contacted that person, who's that person contacted. So and these concentric circles go, you know, two or three deep at least. So you could be the babysitter of a friend of a friend who knows or who has had contact with the target, and so these may be Americans. A lot of them probably are, and they become under some suspicion now simply because they happen to fall into this concentric circle around the target, and they may be two or three removed from them. So it's very dangerous, and you know what's so ironic here is the fact that the NSA keeps missing these terrorist incidents. I mean, this has been going on now for what, 6 or 7 years, and they missed the Boston bombing, they missed the underwear bomber, they missed the Times Square bomber, and so forth. Even though these people have been communicating over the internet and telephones, mm-hmm. All the time this program was going on.
Right.
So, you know, what good is this program here? It's abusing a lot of civil liberties and so forth, but it doesn't seem to be catching any terrorists. And in addition to that, it's counterproductive because when you're trying to solve a problem, the last thing you want is more data put on it. And so what they're doing is putting these they're trying to find a needle in a haystack, and they keep putting more hay on the haystack. It's like every time they have an incident, they call in more people to put more hay on the haystack, making it much more difficult to find the needle. Instead
right.
of, you know, reducing the haystack and spending the money hiring people who are very capable of finding needles.
Yeah, you talk about in the Shadow Factory about, I think you're using their language, you're quoting them at the NSA talking about desperately trying to surf on all this information, this ocean of data, rather than drowning in it. And yet they seem to do nothing but drown in it.
Well, it's because they, when in doubt, asked for more data. And, you know, the other interesting thing, I was just in London for about 10 days, and they're having a similar debate over there. They have been having a similar debate while I was over there. It was about whether the government should be given permission to require the ISPs, the Internet Service Providers, to keep all their information for a year or more and then provide the government access to it. And this was through a bill through Parliament to suggest this and so forth. It's basically what NSA has been doing, except they put it all in this storage facility out in Utah. But what the difference is the British are going about this through a democratic process. There's a bill through Parliament to recommend that they have the Internet service providers store this data and provide the government access to it at some point if they need to have access to it. It was turned down the first time. It's coming up again. It's probably going to be turned down again this time. But the difference is it's out in the open. They're discussing this, and there's debate, and that's why it's been turned down. The public's been against it. Here, it's like East Germany in Cold War, you know, they just do it. It's just secret. We'll just do this. We'll get access to all this information. There's no democratic process involved.
Right. Yeah, and also, you know, this is one of the things that's supposed to be the difference between here and England is we have a Bill of Rights that says what it says forever and for always, and tough if you don't like it, government. And so the Fourth Amendment is still the Fourth Amendment, even if they pass 100 laws.
Well, exactly. And you know, what's interesting is how they... I don't think in the history of the United States has ever been a government official has come out and said that what we did was against, what the government did was against the law. They always base whatever their actions are on some law that somebody like John Yoo writes in some back room in the Justice Department, and they write an opinion saying this is all legal.
Right.
And that's what they did this time. They're saying, well, there is this rule that says that we can go in and get business records. You know, but whoever assumed that that meant that you can get everybody's telephone records in the entire country?
Right.
I mean, it's so absurd. But they're saying, well, we did it legally because they said we can get business records. And these are business records.
Well, and you know, Jim Sensenbrenner, the congressman, is saying, I wrote the Patriot Act, and I never said you could do that.
Right. I love that. Yeah, that's really great.
Right, now one of the things that's going on here, you referred to there, you know, about the method of what they think they're doing with all this data. And you talk about this in the book, too. And it's been enough years now. I don't remember exactly how it goes in the book. But basically, I think a lot of what we're talking about here, when government says intelligence, what they mean is a government-sponsored conspiracy theory. And what they're doing with these computers is they're basically just automating conspiracy theory. And we've seen this kind of thing in practice in Afghanistan. And Gareth Porter won the what's-her-name prize in England for his great reporting on the Delta Force night raids going around murdering Afghans in the middle of the night based on the fact that your brother's cousin's nephew's cousin's former roommate had a cell phone that once called this guy, that once called that guy, and so you're all in the big Haqqani conspiracy against us. And when it's all automated, then that makes it even easier to get away with doing wrong on the part of the people who supposedly are responsible, because then their attitude is simply, well, the computer says. The computer's determined there's a 51% chance that it's okay to tap Jim Bamford's phone. The computer says that there's a 35% chance that we ought to go ahead and do a drone strike on this guy doing jumping jacks, and we'll call him a militant later, or whatever it is. And basically, there's no knowledge here, right? There's no, like, actual people coming up with real answers to real questions. They're just asking Windows to figure out who's the bad guy.
Right. It eliminates all this issue of probable cause and warrants and so forth. I mean, all those
and
things.
And accountability.
Yeah, exactly. And all that was put in there to prevent exactly this kind of thing. So, the NSA is inundated with computers, and that's how they feel that they're going to find a suspect. The problem is, what they're trying to do is find terrorists by taking the entire population of the United States and looking at it, instead of doing the way which is the way everybody else does, and that's you start with a predicate, some action, somebody does something, and then you work back from there. You find who's connected to that, who's involved with that person. Then you get that person's phone records, and you get somebody else's phone records that's associated with that person. So you work in that direction rather than trying to just take everybody's phone calls and see who's calling whom.
Right. Now,
I mean, that's the way George Orwell might have had it if he was rewriting 1984 into 2013.
Yeah, for sure. So this is going to sound silly, I think, especially from the fact that I've asked you this for years now, and you've always said, no, not like that. But there was an FBI agent on TV on CNN a few weeks back, and Greenwald wrote about this, is the reason I know about it. You may have seen this. And this FBI agent told the CNN lady, and twice, he came back the next day and repeated it, that the NSA and or the FBI, whoever, I guess, would be able to go back and listen to Tamerlane Tsarnaev, to listen to his phone calls, who he spent, not just find out, look at a piece of paper or a printout of which phone numbers his phone number has been in contact with, but actually listen to his phone conversations to go back in time. And they clarify, wait a minute, are you saying that they have actual recordings of everybody's phone calls that they can just go back and listen to? And the agent said yes. And now it didn't seem quite right to me. In fact, I thought he must mean something like this at the time. But then again, Jim, I thought, you know what? Telephone quality is not that high quality, and if you can zip it down all the way into, you know, some kind of MP3 that makes it really, really small, why not save the audio files of everybody's phone calls? Is that plausible to you at all, that they're saving the audio of our conversations?
Well, they're saving the external, it's the data, and they're probably saving, they save billions of email every year. That's why they're building the data center in Bluffdale and so forth, but with the it's completely feasible. And whether they were doing it, the problem with this is getting always getting proof that they're doing something like that. I remember reading when that FBI agent said that, and I read it and I thought, wow, you know, I don't know how he would number one know that, number two, how that would technically be possible that they'd be intercepting, you know, enormous amounts of communications. But I can imagine and then storing it. But I can imagine them making an argument for that now by saying that, look, if we had, the two brothers in Boston, if we had their communications from 3 years ago, them talking to Chechnya or other places, then, you know, we would be able to go back and find links and connections. And I could really picture them making that argument. And then, you know, without any debate or whatever, the administration or whatever would come out and say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Well, I'll ask you this. Why do you think that all this stuff is leaking out now? As you said, the FISA court, nobody ever leaks anything from the FISA court. The National Security Agency, a full-scale PowerPoint presentation, not word of one, but here's the PowerPoint about how we're tapping everybody's email and Google searches. I mean, that's really something else, isn't it?
Well, exactly, yeah. And you were mentioning the FBI agent before, that made those comments. And it was interesting to me that he made those comments at the same time, right around the same time he made those comments. And then there was a bit of a flap over that. I saw there were a number of articles written about that conversation. And then all of a sudden, these documents turn up with Glenn Greenwald. You know, one possible scenario there was that he had a follower that heard the controversy and then heard all these people denying that the government does these things, and then he comes forward with the documents or whatever.
Yeah, so let's get this ball rolling. Yeah.
Yeah, because I that was the same thing that happened with the warrantless wiretapping leak. It was a person in the Justice Department who had access to information that where he knew about what was going on, and he blew the whistle on it. And this person here apparently was, it says the intelligence community, you know, sounds like probably NSA, but who knows?
Not that I'm the best at this technical stuff, but one thing I've learned from doing this show is that regular telephone landline quality is only 14K, and cell phone quality is only 8K. And so compared to, you know, I save this audio file of my voice and the music that gets played or whatever at 256 so that it sounds good over, you know, when it gets replayed over the radio later and all that kind of thing. But 8K, that's pretty poor quality, but it's just fine if you want to listen to people's conversation. You could save it down to probably, I don't know, maybe two or three. And if you can modulate it a certain way to wash out any kind of distortion, high-end distortion that you would get or something, maybe you could save it in really low quality and still it would be good enough for a cop to listen to if he needed to go back and listen to it. And then maybe from there, I mean, you think how much MP3 is zipping down compared to the size of a WAV file, right? Well, there must be 100 different ways to code, 1,000 different ways to code audio, and there must be ways to zip it way, way, way down to where really a half-hour conversation between Scott Horton and James Bamford can fit on the point of a pin in terms of storage space.
Well, sure, and, you know, they are intercepting, or they're intercepting and keeping and storing heavy-duty data from the Internet, from that PRISM program where they're getting pictures and audio and video and so forth from the Internet that storing. So,
good point.
So it's not just they're not just putting numbers in there. They're putting, or not just putting telephone numbers in there. They're putting, you know, heavy duty pictures and video and audio and all that that they get from the Internet. I mean, it says right on the on that slide a lot of those things that they're accessing from the, you know, from the internet service providers, Google and all that. And it was also interesting looking at that, one of those slides where it says, now we're going to go after our next target or whatever to try to get cooperation with is Dropbox or mm-hmm. whatever. Where, you know, people put a lot of high megabyte items in and so forth. So, yeah, I don't... the idea that they're just going after just email or something, I think, is a mistake.
Damn it, Jim. I was really hoping that you were going to say, Scott, you're getting ahead of yourself. No, there's no way in the world that they're saving all our phone calls. But you know what? You're right. I mean, compare that to all the what they're downloading every day. The audio of Americans' phone calls can only be just a percentage of that, right? Not, it's not 1,000 times what they're already saving, probably. I mean, I'm just making things up, you know, in my imagination, but it seems like it's probably just a percentage of what they're already getting rather than doubling or tripling it if they were to add all the phone call audio, right?
Well, sure, they may have ways of shrinking a lot of this data down, too, or a lot of ways to compress it. You know, NSA is at the ultimate edge of the technological realm. Yeah. They're working on a computer now, building a computer down in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, that will be basically the fastest, most powerful computer on Earth, able to do a I think it's called a zettaflop worth of calculations. That's like a septillion operations a second or something like that.
Wow.
It'll take up, it'll be the size of an entire warehouse. And again, that was all secret. I wrote about that in my Wired article last year on the data center in Bluffdale. Mm-hmm. So they were building that thing simultaneously with building Bluffdale. So they're, you know, the idea is to have this super powerful computer to go through all the things they're storing in Bluffdale.
Yeah. Well, and then I guess, and this is one of the things that you talk about in your article, too, and this has actually been the subject of whistleblowers and scandals and what have you, is the software used to sift this information. And I think that was sort of the silver lining on the Drake case, right, was that they're no good at doing anything with this stuff because of corruption in the National Security Agency. They'd rather make their friends rich than use a program that works well.
That's true, and we found a lot of that when we were working on the Drake case. And a lot of that stuff just gets buried in the – I mean, never ever see any of that stuff come to the court.
Right. All right, well – and now, when you say a zettaflop or whatever, I take it that because it starts with a Z, that means it's even more than a yottaflop or whatever it was, which is where I think we left off talking and when your book came out in 2008 or 9 or whatever it was. How much data is this? I think in the book you compare it to, you know, in percentages to all of what's been published in the history of humanity.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the some of the comparisons, but it was there's different designations. Like in the storage of data at in Utah, the term was a yottabyte of data, which is the highest number there is, and it was equivalent to 500 quintillion pages of text. So a yottabyte is a measurement of volume size, and then a zeta flop is a measurement of speed.
Oh.
For some reason, somebody never did that good in math.
Bytes and flops.
Got it. That boggles my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard for me to keep straight. It's pretty far outside my area of expertise there, but got it. So flops is speed, and yeah, bytes is size. I knew that much. But, yeah, wow. So, it is, you quote, I think this is, not to ruin it for everybody. I still want you to go out and buy it, but you end the book, The Shadow Factory, quoting Frank Church as saying that we already have, and this is in the 1970s when I was a little baby crawling around on the floor. Frank Church, the senator, said, this is a turnkey totalitarian state. If you took the military surveillance capability that the U.S. government has and turned it toward the American people, they would be slaves. That'd be end game for freedom in America. That's it.
Well, and he said that at a time when there was no internet, no cell phones, no Google searches, and Bluffdale storage facility for NSA. So, you know, he said this at a time way before the NSA has the capability to do what it can do today. I actually have to jump off here just a minute or so, unfortunately.
That's fine. I actually was about to cut you off here, too. I got to go. But I want to really thank you very much for your time. And then I can take the rest of this time. I can run out the hour telling everybody about your books. So thanks very much, Jim.
I appreciate it. Well, thanks, Scott. Always good being on your show.
Yeah, it's definitely good to talk
take
to you.
Care.
All right, everybody. That is the great James Bamford, and he's the author of The Puzzle Palace, Body of Secrets, and The Shadow Factory, about the National Security Agency. And then he also wrote A Pretext for War, which is just an excellent telling of how the neoconservative movement basically, you know, did a regime change in D.C. and took the country to war in Iraq and ruined everything for everyone for generations. Okay, good. So that is the great James Bamford. Also, read him. He had a thing about the giant news storage facility in Utah in Wired that ran, I think, last December. And I interviewed him about that. And search his name at my site, scotthorton.org, and listen to my interviews of him going back through the years. But you got to read The Shadow Factory, man. It'll absolutely blow your mind, what these guys are up to. And you can get it on audiobook and whatever. In fact, I've read it, and then I listened to it on audiobook. Good stuff, man. The great James Bamford. Oh, and also read his great article in Rolling Stone, The Man Who Sold the War, all about John Rendon. That's a good one. Admit it, our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them, and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and statists of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com, and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to $1 a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. Every month, plumline individualist editor Sheldon Richman brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF president Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year, or online for $15 a year, at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up, because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia in the Future of Freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the Future of Freedom. And tell them Scott sent you. Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill. And they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors, and those
those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email scott@scotthorton.org for more details. See you there. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.